Welcome to Additive Paths. We're a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I'm your host, Mark Phoenix.
And I'm Ben Hutchings.
Correct, you are. So this week we are talking about the not at all likely to get people kind of riled up subject of Macs versus PCs. Is one better than the other? It's interesting with the development and design world being computer types, you kind of would half expect everybody to be very cool and very objective when selecting operating systems, different bits of software to use. But as we've often commented in the past, people seem to almost have slightly fanatical sports fan like devotion to certain things. And this is certainly true with Macs and PCs. If there's ever any articles online about this sort of thing, you just kind of, you put your heat shield on.
Try and ignore the comments. If you do have to look into the comments, shield your eyes.
Put your welder's glasses on and then go down and have a look. And it's interesting just how much ire it seems to bring out in people. The Guardian is probably one of the worst places for it. Every time there's a review of an Apple product, it's kind of half in the comments, half people saying, oh, it was expensive, overpriced, rubbish, and all you kind of people, you've had the wool pulled over your eyes, and then other people like, oh, you don't understand, and it's, So you're a Mac person.
I'm a
PC person. And I'm at a point where my PCs are quite old. So trying to do any kind of development work involves a lot of factoring in thumb twiddling time. I need to think about updating my system. So I'm at the point where I'm thinking about maybe making the switch from Mac to PC.
And in case anyone's feeling a little alienated, towards the end of this episode, we are going to talk about Linux briefly.
Are we now?
I've got a feeling that, you know, some people might mentally switch off.
We don't want to kind of alienate the Linux crowd.
No, they can be amongst the most angry.
Oh, is that so? I've not actually had any dealings with Linux or Linux people. How can you pick out a Linux person in the crowd?
Don't make me insult people without meaning to, because no.
They're the ones wearing t-shirts. Linux!
Sandals.
Yeah, there we go. You fall into my trap. So you actually made the switch from PC to Mac, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
So what was it that made you make the switch?
It started off with hardware. Right. I wanted good hardware. And was searching around for something like a Toughbook. Who they buy? Is it Toshiba? Or
who
makes
the
Toughbook? I've forgotten.
Not IBM, was it?
That's a ThinkPad, which is also good. But no, a BT engineer came to turn up to install, put some ADSL lines in. And he had a Toughbook, and it looked like he'd thrown it into, you know, off a cliff, and it was fine. And he loved it. We were talking about it, and I looked around, and the costs, wow. The kind of the additional cost for the features of the Toughbook. Which ended up being mainly casing, I think, put me off with that. But I was looking for good hardware, and I kept. See, I'd been a PC user for a long time, and I'd worked with quite a lot of designers who were Mac users, and I was quite prejudiced in a way against the Mac idea.
That's interesting.
And I was like, oh, give it a rest.
So what did you think the Mac idea was? Because it's interesting, because we've spoken about it a few times.
Yeah.
Because we've been to a couple of conferences. And I think there's an episode, I can't remember what episode it was, when we went to to WordCamp Birmingham, which is my first conference. And you go in, and I went in, and it's a sea of Macs.
Mm.
Like, you know, I think if you looked at the audience, you'd see kind of all the little kind of glowing Apple symbols. And then there'd be one guy in the corner with a Lenovo or with a Toshiba, which was me. And there's kind of almost some kind of implicit pressure. You kind of feel like you almost have to have a Mac to be part of the crowd. I don't know if that's just something that people who don't have Macs yet think.
I don't know. No,
But so I mean, when you
suppose you would in a conference in that sort of situation. When I was working up in a studio and we had all the designers on Macs, and then we had three web developers on, or web, the web kind of department. We're all on PCs.
Okay.
I don't know how that happened. Anyway.
was that usual back then, or was it just peculiar to you?
It was quite a while ago. So it was coming out of, it wasn't too long before that we'd moved, that OS 10 or OS X had been released, and OS 9, I believe, I don't know, I can't imagine it being anyone doing web development on it.
Right.
It was, I don't want to be too, in my opinion, it was pretty horrific.
Right.
And viewing the designers and the problems they had with their Macs at the time, using on OS 9, I didn't want to touch them.
Okay.
And so when OS 10 came out, I was very dubious until I started to see that it had Unix style BSD sort of underpinnings.
Right.
And that was really where it started to make sense. And I could get it, and I could think, that, because the servers we ran, web servers and things, were nearly always using Linux.
Mm-hmm.
And things like firewalls, when I used to be a net admin, would be running on things like FreeBSD. But it's Unix. I mean, it's different flavors and different window managers for them, and different terminals, different bash environments.
Mm-hmm.
But effectively, if you can use one, you can very quickly migrate to another. And it's really quite different from the Windows sort of. Am I getting too technical?
Well, we're going to save some of the technical stuff for part two, I think, because we're going to talk about. At some point, we're going to talk about alternatives. And we're going to talk about, the actual slightly more objective differences between the two, right? In our opinions, anyway, right. Or your opinion. But I'm kind of interested in the kind of. Not exactly the philosophical reasons, but the more cultural reasons that people choose a particular platform, because it's, if you actually, we got some feedback from a few listeners, and one in particular who described himself as platform agnostic, which I thought was quite an interesting idea, because there are some people who just have a very emotional attachment to one thing or the other, whether through it's the thing that they've always used, or they've always been a little suspicious about the other guys. But it's not that I'm interested in. Like, do people feel like a web developer or a designer has to have a Mac? Like, if you were going into a pitch meeting, say, with a bunch of other agencies, and you didn't have a Mac, you opened up a different laptop, would everybody look at you and think, what's this joker doing here?
Yeah, I wonder if they would now, maybe. I mean, there's some fairly high-profile people like Dave Rupert and some others who are having a go with Windows again, and almost like saying, well, we need to kind of forgive Microsoft for Vista, and maybe forgive them for Windows 8 until 8.1 came along, and then but 10 is really quite usable, and I don't want to sort of jump ahead, but I was going to jump ahead again, but that's my point.
It's okay, it'll come
back.
What
was your point? What was your question?
About my point was about whether people feel like you have to have a Mac to be a designer.
Yes, so I'm thinking over the last sort of four, five years, that's probably been the case. In the same way that back when OS 9 was around, and back when I was using, and I think a lot of people were using Windows for web development, if you booted up some OS 9-based MacBook, I don't think they were even called MacBooks then, but people would probably say, what? Because all the users, the Mac users I worked with, it might have just been in the studio I was in, but there was a fair few people, all of them had the idea of, it's not just in that studio, because a friend of mine was a music producer who used to run a little studio out in Essex, and he had exclusively Macs there. And the answer to everything they ever had in both the studio I worked in and his studio was, if it's broken, just reinstall the OS. It was way easier to do than Windows is, and way quicker as well. But there was no real... When you search on Mac product forums for a long time... Very little technical knowledge.
That's
similar to searching Adobe forums, I find. A lot of users are very, you don't get very technical answers often. Whereas with Windows, but I'm based in Microsoft forums, like in TechNet, you'd get some very, go and edit this, go and patch that. go and install this, and there's your fix, and look at this log file, what's the output? And
that's interesting.
Which is now exactly what you now get with the Mac community, because everything, since it went Unix based, you've got access to the whole OS.
Right.
Effectively.
Every time you say it's Unix based, I keep thinking back to Jurassic Park. It's a Unix system.
Yes.
That is interesting then. So, I mean, there were sort of genuine technical reasons why people favoured one platform over another sort of back then.
I used to look at it as someone who's using Windows and a pared down Windows with all the fades and rubbish turned off. Just a very, very basic install, very fast. Mm-hmm. I'd think they're a technical user. And someone who was using Mac OS 9 or the first version of OS 10, the first release, was like, oh, it's just another one of those designer people who...
Mm.
The kind of person who's got an Audi TT and has never opened the bonnet. It's the same person that is an Apple user. That was my view then.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I think when we talked before we started the show, we sort of spoke a little bit about, again, the sort of the implications of choosing one system or another. And one of our listeners, Ross Wintle, whose website is Oikos Digital, he wrote a blog post about buying a Mac and almost like the mental process he went through buying it, considering it to be like a luxury product, almost a bit of an indulgence.
Hmm.
And he finally, you know, got around to buying one. We'll talk a bit about what he said in part two. But he said he almost felt slightly embarrassed about buying it. And we were talking about cars earlier because I've always fancied getting a Volvo, but I didn't ever really want to be a Volvo driver.
Mm-hmm.
And you said sort of similar.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think a fairly good parallel for me is BMW. And I feel this is where it does show how I feel about Apple, really, in terms of how I used to and also how I do now. I do think that I reckon it's the best OS to develop on. And I think overall, it's the best hardware. Mm. Overall. In terms of money spent and things going wrong and time spent under the bonnet of a Windows system and putting up with problems that don't work. That's my experience with it. And I feel the same as probably everyone I've ever spoken to who's owned a BMW has said, oh, brilliant, yeah, get one. But every time I'm driving around, I end up being enraged by a BMW driver.
Yeah.
And I almost feel the kit is brilliant, but... What is the problem with BMW drivers? And it's just, you know, maybe there isn't one.
Mm.
Jem feels the same about Audi drivers. I'm like, well, I thought Audi drivers were fine, but she's, yeah. Mm. So, and it's the same kind of thing as if I was to buy one. When I first bought my Mac, I bought it with a Windows 7 license.
Okay.
And I immediately boot camped it and I installed Windows 7 on it and I used Windows 7 on it for a few months.
Interesting.
Because at that point I was, oh, OS 10, oh, rubbish. But this is a nice piece of hardware.
Right.
I'm going to run Windows on it. And then over that, I was actually, every time I booted into Mac OS just to do something, I was like, God, this is easy to use, really easy to use. And then I'd see some tool and release new web development tool and it'd say Mac only, or it was reviews would say, oh, I'm using the Mac version. And I'm thinking, oh. And so I'd just buy one, or I'd download a free tool, or I'd use something and I'd do a little bit of work on it. And I think, oh, yeah.
I'm almost imagining you kind of like going through the lobby of a fine hotel and not looking at it and then kind of like opening the doors to a greasy smooth restaurant. Oh,
a big thing was the Steam client. The Steam client was released and I was playing StarCraft and there was StarCraft for Mac and it was available for Mac. So I installed it for Mac and I ran it under Mac OS. I thought it ran, I was like, oh yeah, I'm really happy with this. And I started to just use Mac OS all the time and then look for ways to migrate over. And didn't find any problem at all.
Hmm. So there was a bit of convincing.
Yeah, it was. So in the same way that I think I'd have to probably own, if we know someone who's got an X5, a BM X5, whatever the equivalent of like the M X5 is, it's ridiculously powerful. We were out a while ago and he said, do you want to drive it back? He's like, you've got third party insurance. I drove it home from Winchcombe, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. I was thinking I need, you know, I wish we had blacked out windows. People might see me in this BMW driving like an idiot because it makes you like, yeah, I can go anywhere. And it's super fast. And I felt kind of guilty and I felt like I needed to, I don't know, contribute to some sort of cycling charity for a while because I'd driven a BMW. It was an amazing machine. But if I was going to buy one, I'd have a real problem like I did initially with buying the Mac. I'd put a Windows sticker on it. I'd be like, it's a MacBook with a Windows sticker. I'm running Windows on this. Yeah, man.
You'd have a bike on the inside.
It's silly, isn't it? It's silly.
You could sort of like cut some holes in the floor and have pedals or something. Yeah. So, but it's weird. It's funny how much emotion we invest into decisions like this, because as developers, cars, they're always trying to sell you a lifestyle along with the car. So you can understand why people attach those sort of things to cars.
Yeah.
And I guess Apple is with you when you watch their ads. That's one of the things that kind of, I don't know if it puts me off, but when you watch those insufferable Apple ads, it makes you wretch almost.
Mm.
Because they are trying to turn them into lifestyle products. And I suppose that's the way things are. I'm sure they've got their advertising people who know how to sell the products, and it seems to work. But it is curious for me, I find, like how much emotion we invest into it. Like when my gun for it to be sort of the cover photo for this episode, when I went to that conference a while ago, I like taped an apple onto the photo of my Toshiba and took a photo of it. As I was doing it, I thought, I genuinely am going to be a little self-conscious tomorrow about having my Toshiba there.
Yeah.
But why? And I think when I looked around, there were, how many people were there? Maybe 200 possibly?
Yeah,
200, well, yeah. 200, 300.
I thought it was more, yeah.
Maybe more. I only remember seeing one other person who didn't have a Mac.
Oh, right.
And I think they had a ThinkPad, and it looked like an old ThinkPad as well. Only other person. And I forgot about it in the end. But it's odd that it becomes an emotional decision.
Yeah.
And like when I was making the video for the Pixelsmiths website, and I was kind of conscious about not having any footage of me opening my computer in the video being a Toshiba, because I thought, well, actually,
is this why you've got Ken using it but he's using it?
Yeah, Ken's like his own one. This kind of feels like the DVD extras. So it's Ken actually working on my computer. Before I did I took some footage. I was thinking about going into Firefox and taking out all of my web developer kind of add-ons, because I think they've got built with and a couple of other sort of things.
Yeah.
So any eagle-eyed people might sort of realize that that's not a client's browser.
Yeah.
But I did genuinely think, I feel a little self-conscious about showing this, about committing it to film. So, yeah, and I just want, I mean, we'll talk about this a bit more in part two about sort of the substance of that. But do we have to pay attention to that? Is there an expectation? And do we have to pay attention to it, particularly if you're getting work?
What? I think it's fine. I'd like to think that it's okay to be, it would be good to be technically agnostic, like that guy said he was, which is quite a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
But I'd hate to think that someone would do what I suppose for a period of time I did, and a lot of people do, is they ignore something better because they don't want to be, because they're being an anti-snob about it.
Yes.
All the other way around, that let's talk about some technical things in a minute, but there was a couple of months, about 2 months ago, for a period of about a month, I seriously considered getting a backup Windows machine again, because I was having some problems with macOS, which have now been fixed. I'll talk a bit about more, but I'd like to think that if the Apple hardware or the Mac, the OS wasn't delivering, I'd again look elsewhere and say, right, so what does deliver?
Yeah.
But often we stop ourselves. We almost have like an elastic effect. We stop ourselves, and then suddenly boom, and then gush over whatever the new thing is we found.
Yeah.
And you get the zeal of the converted.
Yes.
Which
yes.
I must say I had. I was like, once I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This really is easy to use, and it really does just work. And I hate that phrase, it just works. The whole idea of, but Apple's just work. I was like, whoa, but it booted up super quick.
Yeah.
And it hasn't crashed in weeks and weeks. In fact, probably never, it didn't crash for the first 6 months of using it.
Yeah.
Windows crashes was something I got used to. The whole blue screen of death thing is something that's become a joke.
Yeah.
It's not that that doesn't happen with Macs.
Having said that, it's been an awful long time. But having been a Windows user for a long time, it's been an awful long time since I've had one of those. I think the issue that I've had is over the hardware, which is I guess not necessarily Windows' fault, necessarily.
Well, it's one thing they haven't got quite as much, or anywhere near as much control on.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
a good, exactly. That's why the hardware people kept saying to me when I was buying this laptop, get a MacBook. And I was like, yeah, but, and they're like, yeah, but Apple can, they can provide all, they know exactly what they're shipping you, and they can provide all their own drivers for it. And I know you've got Microsoft signed drivers and things like that, but you've got so many different vendors, and they'll sell you, go and buy a graphics card. I mean, graphics cards are a perfect example of, well, it's an NVIDIA graphics card from 17 different providers with 17 different versions of the NVIDIA driver and slightly different versions of the chipset. And it won't work with your particular flavor of motherboard. And it's like,
the amount.
That's so aggravating.
The amount of times when like something goes wrong and it's a driver and it's because, like you said, it's a slightly kind of non-standard browser. And then you've got to go kind of, you know, put your Davy lamp on and you've got to go hunting around in the, you know, into the Windows file system to kind of to tweak some obscure little file.
The downside of that is the cost of Apple hardware is high. You know, you buy some sort of network adapter. I bought a little Lightning. You're going to stop me. I've got the finger of stop.
We've got the finger of stop. We're kind of getting into some of the more technical stuff there. So we're going to save that for part two. So we'll do that. We'll have a pause and we'll have a quick tool star.
Okay.
And then we'll kind of get into the technicals. Okay, so this is our tool star, where we take a look at a application or service that should be of particular interest to the developer types. And I was going to ask Ben to choose one which was of particular use to Mac owners, or like an essential one. What's an essential bit of developer kit that a Mac person has to have?
But isn't that skewing the... why a Mac? Aren't you skewing the results of this podcast?
This is all a fix. The vote is rigged. I kind of feel myself inexorably moving towards Mac. I describe myself the same as kind of Ross Wintle, as being kind of platform agnostic. However, I find the draw towards Mac to be kind of irresistible. First of all, for... some problems that I've had with Windows, like we just talked about, kind of like if you're trying to fix a problem, because the hardware is non-standard, you can spend, I can't remember what I was trying to fix the other day, but I spent an entire day trying to fix a problem with my setup. And I think with Mac, you know, like you said, you tend to get less of that because everybody knows exactly what's going on. I feel myself kind of drawn in that direction. So I have been looking around and sort of mentally piecing together what sort of kit I would need. So not that it's a completely done deal, but it's probably a complete...
So if I feature something that's essential for Mac based web development, can you feature something for Windows?
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you first.
So I'd say that regardless of tools that you're using for compiling whatever it is you're building, or designing whatever it is you're building, you need something to serve those pages locally. You don't really want to be working on the fly. Sometimes you do end up having to work on the fly, pushing files up to a server and that's off-site and serving them from there. But usually for speed of development, you want to be working locally. And often that ends up being Apache server. And with probably, if it's a PHP-based web app, you've got PHP installed and you've got some sort of database driver, some database system. So in my case, it's nearly always MySQL. And I used to do that up until 6 months ago, probably, maybe a bit more. I just did that through local actual installs of those packages then like...
Hardcore.
Custom. Well, it's just... No, it's not. It's just it ships with...
Of course.
Mac ships with Apache and ships with PHP.
Of course, yeah.
So you would put MySQL on it and then you've got it there. And it's a few config files and a bit of a pain to set up initially. And then I always forget the pain. So it's probably a sort of tool. I end up spending 2 or 3 hours messing about and then not have to worry about it until I next did an OS upgrade. Not a minor upgrade, but a full OS version upgrade, or rebuilt it for some reason. Those custom setups don't survive upgrades, which is a bit irritating. Anyway, I just had used a trial of MAMP. And I think I may have even featured MAMP before, but as we're talking about it again now, specifically MAMP Pro. So it is going to install for you PHP, and you can install multiple versions of PHP and MySQL. And it's easy to configure through a GUI Apache interface, which I think is really useful for people. I think it's useful if people know how to do it.
Right.
How to understand where the config files are and things. But I don't any longer feel like I'm better than everyone if I don't configure it through a GUI, whereas I used to maybe think, well, yeah, but I don't want to be constrained by this GUI. Yeah. but now I'm like, yeah, but the GUI has got a button that's just done what I would have had to go in, open a terminal, change something from true to false, save it, remember that I haven't remembered to change the permissions of the owner on the file, so it's not, why isn't that service starting? Oh, yeah, I've got...
Yes.
Gone. Yeah. So I love it. It's about £30. So it's not a free... Well, MAMP is, but then MAMP Pro is the config, the front end for it.
Yeah.
And...
I see.
Yeah, so MAMP you can get for free, and it runs well.
Yeah.
But Pro allows you to configure things. Oh, the other day, I had something wasn't working. It was an e-commerce gateway, and I'd set it to work over SSL, TLS, you know, a secure connection.
Yeah.
And had I had to set up secure serving manually, which I've done in the past, it's a bit of a pain.
Right.
But in MAMP, it really was tick
that's
a button.
Interesting.
Do you want to use a self-signed certificate? Yes. Generates a self-signed certificate. Done.
Yeah.
Serving the site over HTTPS.
I understand that.
Really was worth it. Almost for that. That was my fault. That the fact that took me 1 minute instead of 30 minutes almost paid for the license for the...
Yeah.
For the version, it's not the yearly, it's per version.
Yeah. I understand the sort of the want to preserve some bits of knowledge that have kind of, that you can, you know, you can produce just by ticking a box. It's kind of almost feels, it's almost feels a bit like making fire. Yeah. You actually make fire and you, I don't know, I'd struggle to. But in the back of my mind, I think, you know, one day if I'm sort of out in the jungle somewhere, marooned, without the rest of my unit, then maybe I'd need to one day. But the reality is you probably wouldn't ever have to. Mm. And I think sometimes with web development, if you can pursue that idea a little too far, and you can end up kind of doing a lot of stuff that, you know, sat next to somebody who does all of that stuff in a couple of minutes, and you're slaving away at it because you want to do it the old-fashioned way. We've got WAMP on Windows, which is what I use, but there isn't a GUI for it, so you do have to go in and sort of edit the localhost's file if you want to, like, yeah, if you want to kind of spin up a new site, you've got to enter it in manually. But it works fine. Like, it's one of those things that once you've done it once, you know how to do it. And I think because of the way that Windows works, that those things do survive an update. So I had it on my machine, which was Windows 7. So from 7 to 10, it's all still there.
Right.
So WAMP's useful. So, I mean, if you want to do the same thing, then there's WAMP. But as far as something which is kind of essential for Windows use, Prepros as a preprocessor, because I guess, do you CodeKit? Do you use CodeKit, or are you Grunt or Gulp?
Both Grunt and Gulp at the moment.
Okay. But for people who use...
Well, not both together. What I mean is I'm in the middle of deciding.
Oh, okay.
I can't decide.
Oh, that could another episode. But, I mean, if you wanted sort of one of those kind of slightly more out of the book.
That is a bit like everyone's using Grunt, and then people start using Gulp, and then people start saying, you should use Gulp because...
When I actually
looked at it and used it, and the speed of compilation of Gulp is way quicker.
Got you.
But the size of projects I'm working on, it's a matter of waiting 1 second or two.
Right, got you.
You know, 2 seconds or five. Not bothered about... And the Grunt config is so much simpler.
Yeah.
But if you're a Node.js developer, you'd say the Gulp config is similar.
Yeah.
Much easier because it's... Yeah.
Yeah, these things are...
It's just there's the herd all go in one direction. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going there too. And I used it and thought, actually, this is a bit of a pain for Gulp.
Yeah.
Grunt, sorry. So,
I guess the reason why herds move in certain directions, aren't there? I mean, and I guess you have to take it into consideration. We're back to Prepros. Sorry. We'll come into this in a second. Prepros is a really good preprocessor. I think it is the Windows equivalent of CodeKit, but you can actually get Preprost for Mac as well. So I think if stroke, when I move over, I'll probably keep Preprost and then maybe investigate Grunt or Gulp, because again, another one of the things about switching platforms or switching apps is the learning curve. And I think that can be part of the resistance if you kind of get good at using a particular system. You're just going to think all that knowledge is kind of going to be binned now. So sort of, so, you know, like...
Well, the cost of the time to learn as
Yeah. So, but anyway, so to wrap up that particularly rambly tool start, that is MAMP and Preprost. Okay, so back to part two. We're going to talk about some of the more technically things. And we're just talking about some of the learning curve issues of adapting to new platforms. So we're going to talk a bit more about the slightly more technical side of it. But actually, back to the learning curve aspect, we sent out to some of our Twitter, we sent out on Twitter asking for some feedback from people who've used both. And we had quite an interesting bunch of feedback. And one of them from Darren Beale thought was quite interesting, where he said on Twitter, "I've tried twice to switch from Windows to OS X both times, and I've gone back after giving it a good few months attempt." So it's quite interesting to see that there are ones who use Windows, you know.
Yeah, I tried to ask him for more feedback then, because I wanted to know what it was that broke. Did he reply? He didn't, did he, to that second question? No. I wanted to know what it was that each time he was like, "Oh, I can't stick with this." Because I'm sort of surprised that after that period of time, he didn't start to just get used to the new OS and...
Yeah.
But maybe, yeah, shame. Yeah. Let's hope he happens to tweet us in the next sort of 10 minutes, like I say. Here's his feedback.
We could wait. We just wait for 10 minutes.
I tell you what I'm going to do now. I'm going to just tweet him again and say, "We're recording. Do you have an answer to that question?" And he might.
You never know. You know, okay.
He's the sort of kind of person that's often canoeing places and chopping up wood. You should follow him on Twitter. It's quite cool, actually.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. We had one from Michael Thomas that I thought was funny.
He said, "Yes.
I moved from Mac to PC. I went back to PC. It was like going from jazz riffing in the club to playing recorder at primary school. And I badgered my mum endlessly for a recorder for weeks and weeks. When I was a kid, actually, I have to say, when I was at primary school, it wasn't like, you know, last week. And she eventually bought me one. And I think I went to one lesson and blew it like three times. And I was like, I hate this.
Yeah. So did everyone else.
Because I remember like being in the lesson. And it was me with like, you know, I think it was just the only other people in there were the girls. And you know what it's like when you're like about seven, you're like, "Oh, I'm with all the girls." And all of my mates were outside playing football and I was inside learning the recorder. And I was like, "I can't play this brilliantly immediately.
Yeah, I'm going to give up.
But anyway, but I thought what Michael said was quite interesting, because it's unusual to sort of to hear about people going from Windows to Mac and then going back to Windows. It tends to be more the exception than the rule. Most people who go over seem to have, you know, the moment that you have, like the scales fall from their eyes. But I think I personally worried about that, because, you know, the hardware is quite expensive. So it's a bit of a gamble. But then again,
the hardware is expensive. So this is where the finger of stop came up just now. But I was about to say that the network adapter, the connector. Thunderbolt to LAN connector is sort of £30 or £40 quid or something.
Yes, yeah.
And if you look for a PC based one, like £4, £3.50, you'll find something that's, say, USB network adapter, USB to LAN to network, and Ethernet. That's the word I'm looking for. And there is a massive difference in cost. And every time you want to some sort of gender changer for the Mac, it's going to be £20-30 a pop. Mm. Want a new PSU for it? I wanted a spare power supply, and it was £60.
Yeah.
And I had a moan at the guy in Western Digital, because we haven't got a Mac store, but we've got Western Digital, who are as good as, I think.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Well, it's just the cost." You know, I was like, "Yeah, but 60 quid. Yeah, it's a switch mode pass. I'm like, yeah, I know it's a switch, but 60 quid. Because at the time, I didn't want to spend 60 quid that day. But matched hardware, it does work. I think once you've invested in the, in that sort of, what's the word, environment?
Yeah.
Ecosystem?
Yeah.
I was going to say, once you've invested, it's good because you've got it, but that's probably not true, because you buy a new MacBook and suddenly it doesn't use USB, it uses USB-C. And you're like, I got to buy all my adapters again. Yeah. So I understand the irritation. I've experienced it myself.
Mm. But I was trying to get my desktop to speak to my laptop.
Right.
And again, spent, had all sorts of kind of odd little things going wrong with it, and had to go to the forums and find out sort of how to fix it. And it's kind of, you know, again, it was a problem that I'm fairly competent with it. So, you know, it was a legitimate problem. And I get the feeling you won't get that quite so much with Apple stuff. It just tends to speak to, things can speak to each other a little bit more.
Easily. Actually, interfacing, I would say, very much.
And there's lots of little things like that. Like, I've been looking at alternatives. And if you look at the kind of hardware that Apple has, to get something with like a 500, sort of like a terabyte SSD.
Ooh.
Pretty expensive.
Yeah, that's going to be though, because...
That's expensive to buy an Apple one, but I sort of looking around at Windows-based stuff, I think the Surface Book by Microsoft has one, but it's kind of...
Might be what Tom Hopkins has. He showed me last week, and it was really impressive.
Really nice.
Is that the one that slides up? And open and slides back.
Oh no, that's the Surface.
Is it the Surface?
The Surface Book is basically their equivalent of a MacBook Pro. So you use it as a laptop, but the screen does detach and becomes a tablet. But the solid state drive, 128 gigs to 56 or 512 gigabyte solid state drive. And it's about,
what's it cost?
£1,300
mm-hmm.
for a 13-inch screen. So probably there or thereabouts, sort of similar to an equivalent MacBook, I guess.
Probably, yeah.
But then again, like, you know, you kind of almost think, well, why not just buy a MacBook? So it just, I think that's what
I said to you, wasn't it? When you said that earlier about the cost, I was like, why wouldn't you buy it? And I had to stop myself, because that's the whole point of this conversation.
But that's the kind of thing that you kind of, but it's interesting that that's the instinct. And that's what I thought. When I was looking up this, I was looking at the Dell XPS 15, which is a kind of similar prospect, but only has, but again, in terms of storage, has a 1 terabyte hard drive and a 32 gigabyte SSD, so a hybrid thing. And I think there was another Windows PC, laptop PC that I was looking at. The price of them is all pretty much around the price for a MacBook Pro. So it's kind of, it's not as if the MacBook Pro is outlandishly overpriced. If you want to get similar technology in a Windows computer, the difference is, you know, there is a difference, but it's not a huge one. And Ben's waving his phone in a triumphant way. Did you get a reply?
Yeah, he's got back to us with an answer, which is quite interesting.
Go for it.
So Darren Bill, I tweeted him just now to see if he'd come back to his answer as to what it was that kind of broke the camel's back, why he went back to Windows, having tried to use Mac OS for a few months at a time. And by the way, he used to do, I don't know if he's going to start it again, but he did a podcast called A Bit More Backendy, and it was about backend web development.
Okay.
And which is good. It was in 2014, so it's a little bit of a while ago now, but it was around when we started doing this one.
Yeah.
And so it's still around, I think, so take a listen. Have a listen if you want. And he interviewed some interesting people like Rachel Andrew and Mike Ellis, Laura Carbag. Laura Carbag, I wonder what they're doing now.
I don't know.
Another question. Didn't they all go to Norway or something?
I don't know, actually. I've not really kind of kept track of what they're doing with...
What was it called?
Oh, I can't remember what it was. But they're producing kind of...
some sort of phone.
They were producing a phone. And then they weren't indie.
Indie, that's it.
IND.ie. And they were going to produce a phone, and they had they got funders and backers, and then they realized that the phone wasn't viable, which caused some controversy among some of their contributors, but I think they paid them back and stuff.
Right, okay.
And I'm not sure actually. I haven't heard much from
okay them. Sorry to take us off topic.
Yeah, anyway,
off topic.
Yeah. So
I asked him last week. He said I tried twice, switched from Windows to OS 10 both times, have gone back after giving it a good few months attempt. And I said, that's interesting. Reckon you could summarize the main reasons the test failed in a tweet or two? We're getting varied responses to this. And then after the nudge just now, he came back and said, what did he say? He said, I've been using Windows forever. I think I may just be too much of an old dog. Smile. OS 10 was okay. Hardware shiny. But I missed my comfy slippers. One thing I will say, Windows 10 is very stable and doesn't get in the way of me working. So that's a that's good.
I find Windows 10
I'm pretty
stable. Yeah,
doing some support work at a charity, and they've got Windows 10 installed throughout, and I'm quite enjoying it when I've got to use it. But I haven't used it for work. But just as a user OS, it seems far better than. I mean, Vista was horrible. I wonder how much market share they lost.
I don't know.
Vista was so bad.
I wonder if that was the crack that kind of let Mac in.
And then 7 was like, oh, okay, maybe things aren't so bad. And then 8 came along and it irritated a whole bunch more people.
Yeah, yeah. And 10's good.
10 so
and
far seems good. What's 11 going to be like?
I don't.
Just don't upgrade.
11's going to be a picture of some rotting meat with some flies buzzing around it. But that's interesting then, because I'm used to Windows as an operating system, and I kind of know where to go to get stuff done. But because I'm now having to buy some hardware, and I need to buy some proper serious hardware, it's hard to resist Mac. And it's interesting actually. Back to Ross Wintle and the blog post that he wrote about making the switch, and I think that was the thing that influenced him. It was the speed. Of working on, you know, a brand new MacBook. And he was saying that, you know, that's something which he found essential. It's not a luxury to have something which works fast and that boots up really fast, because just with my current setup, you know, I end up spending a lot of time just twiddling my thumbs, waiting for things to happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's just because it's old. But having said that, like with a, you know, just from reading the specs of the, you know, the current sort of top end MacBook Pro, you know it's going to be quick.
It also comes with some bundled software, but not in the same way that PCs do. When it comes with bundled software, you get something like, I don't know, GarageBand and iMovie, and you might think, well, I don't want those. But what it doesn't come with is most PCs come with bundled little applications.
Oh, that, bloatware.
And that's really means that you're from your first boot, you never have. That's why when we used to get them in at the studio I worked in, we'd buy them in. It was cheaper to buy them pre-built and then wipe them, reinstall them.
Okay.
And with nothing. And you'll get things like, for example, Wi-Fi managers. The Wi-Fi manager in Windows, all versions of Windows, is fine. But Dell give you their special Wi-Fi, showing you nice animated what's around you and some lovely radar, and it's running system resident all the time.
Right.
And it's taking up resources, and it's taking resources that need to be used for your day-to-day working. There's so much of that potentially on there, because when the manufacturer produces it, they also have to put their little stamp over the whole. Like Sony Vios, I don't know what they're like now, but they used to be a pain because it all looked very nice, and it was higher-end kit, but it still had the Sony Vio. It almost felt like everything. Don't click the Internet Explorer icon. Click the Sony Vio browse the interweb button, and that will kick off a process to boot up IE.
Right.
Yeah. Why put these layers of junk on top?
I guess they are just trying to kind of stamp their brand.
Exactly.
Toshiba. Yeah. Toshiba Tempro is. Because you get with my Toshiba, again, you have all the Toshiba bloatware on there. And it's constantly, you know, I've tried to delete it, but you can't delete it. And it's always kind of, well, not always, but it's very often sort of nagging me for updates. So the notification center, you kind of get, hey, update me. And I'm just like, go away. So a certain amount of time, not loads of time, but that, you know, a certain amount of time is spent just kind of like shooing all of the.
And you still get notifications and updates and nags from Mac OS, but it's OS. level yeah. updates in the same way that you get Windows update notifications. And I always felt that's fine. It's the OS. But what I didn't want was the vendor updates.
You were gonna mention Linux as well, weren't you?
Yes, we should. And actually, what I'm going to do here is refer to someone who, when we did our Designers Shouldn't Code episode,
yeah,
somewhere we must have mentioned developing. We must have mentioned this subject.
Yes,
and he left a comment on our webpage of our blog post for that episode.
Right.
His name's Leo Tyndall, and it's probably not good podcasting just to read something out, but he can be our voice. He can be the voice for Linux here,
okay.
Because it was quite well reasoned. I thought you and I don't use it. I've used it for server OSs and things like game servers and that, but a long time ago. I use it all the time as a server OS, but not as a day to day, production.
Yeah, I've never been anywhere near it.
Okay, so he says, from the way you were talking about Pathfinder for Mac OS. And about how useful the command line is, I think you really should consider trying Ubuntu, is that how you say it? Or Elementary OS. They're just as developer-focused and user-friendly as Mac OS, and Elementary OS looks just like Mac OS, but they're not restricted in the ways Mac OS are. For example, Nautilus, the main file manager, has a hierarchical view. You can open the terminal from a right-click, it does copy and paste, and it integrates with NFS SMB, Samba file sharing. And of course, Dropbox, Google Drive, insert cloud service here. So he's saying it's kind of a usable OS straight away. And I said, that's interesting, but do you use it yourself? I mean, I'm not going to read my whole reply, but I just asked him about how he got on with things like IDEs and proprietary software like Creative Cloud or Sketch that others might be using. And he says he likes, I like Ubuntu for the most part, but Elementary OS is the same, just with some UI changes. Creative Cloud isn't available, but Inkscape for vector graphics is, GIMP or Pinter for raster graphics,
right.
And other free open source tools that make up for that for zero cost and except for the time. Mm. As for IDEs, WebStorm and PyCharm from JetBrains, both of which have Linux as a first-class platform, and anything that can't run natively, I'll use Wine, a very fast compatibility layer for Windows EXEs. He says, in the end, it all comes down to compatibility. If there's an application you can't live without, then there's no FOSS, so that's free open source software.
Right.
There's no FOSS alternative, then you can't switch.
Hmm.
There's quite a lot here, so I'm just going to summarize how he finishes off. But he says, aside from that, it's better in pretty much every way than proprietary OSs, primarily because it's more configurable. If you don't like the default desktop, use GNOME. If you don't like GNOME, use the K desktop environment or XFCE desktop. I always explain that, the light extensible desktop environment. So what you're saying is you've got almost complete control over of the GUI of this OS. He says that another awesome thing is that most of the components of the OS are open source. If you don't like the way something works, chances are that somebody has forked it or rewritten it in a way that you do like better. And if not, you can do so yourself or file a bug if you're willing to wait. So he finishes off, so I suggest that you try it. It might not be for you, but the investment of time to try Ubuntu is pretty minimal. A couple of hours to install the OS and your applications and configure them. And the monetary investment is pretty much zero.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Worth considering.
Yeah.
Worth considering, I guess. I mean, if that that floats your boat, so to speak.
It's the configurability thing that's exactly it. Some people that will float their boat.
Yes,
it's the same as I use an iPhone. I like the iPhone, but some people hate the iPhone because you can't, unless you jailbreak it.
Yeah,
you can't do as much as you can
with an Android.
So, in the same thing, if you're someone who really wants to tweak every setting,
yeah,
then maybe Linux is the way. But yeah. I would say, I'd say Mac OS. You've got the cost there, but you can tweak nearly everything. A lot. A great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not nearly everything. Not as much as you can on Linux.
Yeah.
It's
interesting. I mean, I think like with all of these things, it just comes down to personal preference, and there is a certain amount of, you can be objective up to a certain point, and then there comes a point where you just like it because it's shiny.
Yeah.
And like with some of the operating systems, you just like it because the icons look nicer over here, and it's kind of thing. It's things like that. So I mean, we have a look at our Twitter, Because you'll see some of what a number of the people that we asked said. As a takeaway, I guess it's just whatever you fancy. I'm probably going to get a Mac, most likely. I'm probably about 65% decided on one. And I'll report back once I've got that to see whether I like it. I mean, I better, considering how much it's going to cost. But I think that's the thing that's been holding me back. It's just...
We could swap. Oh, no.
You don't want to, because with my Toshiba, you'd kind of...
Could you rent one for a very limited period? They don't do short period rentals, do they? It was very expensive.
I mean, the longest that I've spent with it is like an hour in the... in Western Digital, thanks for not throwing me out, Western Digital. I'm just trying to get used to it. And the hardware was great. And moving around the OS, again, seemed pretty instinctive. That's one of the things I've always liked about Apple, is you generally tend to know what you need to do. Mm. And plus, I must say, I am influenced. Going into a conference, seeing a sea of Macs, it's not, I mean, I know there is, as we've discussed, there is a certain cultural imperative or maybe even a herd mentality, but to a degree, herds move in a direction for a reason. If it was an awful system, then...
You get an exodus, wouldn't you, after a while? You do get this elastic effect, but yeah.
Or you'd see much more of a spread. You go to a situation like that and you'd see, maybe a majority of Macs, but then lots of PCs. You know, there'd be a bit more of a
spread. You get more of the car situation, wouldn't you? With lots of different manufacturers, or lots of different marks.
It's not as if everybody's driving a BMW and there's one person.
But you've really only got two. You've only got three really choices. Two choices mainly.
Yeah. So we'll be interested in your feedback. This episode will go on the website with a comment thread underneath. Feel free to comment as madly and as crazily.
Oh, thanks. Great. Some sort of delivery. Oh, goodness.
Should we restart?
A knocking as well. Hang on. Right, that was a delivery. It was a fifth delivery we've had today.
You high roller.
It's just, it just happens to be. Everything's fallen on the same day.
You've got a big box right there.
Which I could bend your ear about for ages, but it's fun. It's fun.
What is it?
Four drives turned up this morning, 4 1-terabit drives, and that is a RAID chassis, QNAP, I think they're called, and I'm building a RAID array for a charity that I do some work with. And I'm really looking forward to configuring it. I think RAID 6, maybe, give them 2 terabits of usable space, but nice and fast. Who knows?
Sorry, my eyes just rolled back.
No, I quite enjoy still keeping the old network in.
I'm only joking. I quite enjoy it. That sort of thing is kind of fun.
But you were doing some amazing take home there, and we've lost where we were because the buzzer went.
Just up to you. Buy what you want.
Yeah, buy what you want.
Buy a PC, buy a Mac, or put them in a particle collider and smash them together and see what happens.
Yeah. Go to a charity shop, buy a really old PC and put Linux on it. You'll love it.
Yeah, so there you go.
Sandals. What?
So, but... always the sandals for you.
Sorry.
We're talking about comments. This is going to be up on the website, so leave us a comment and let us know what you think. And we're going to stop there and do a jukebox.
Yeah.
So this is our new and improved, enhanced jukebox with lyrics and everything for our alternative playlist, which we still can't remember the name for because we recorded this episode straight after the previous one. So I'm pulling the curtain back.
Again.
So, but hopefully at some point we'll tweet out the name of the new playlist. So anyway, my track is Computer World by Kraftwerk. This is from the 2009 remastered version. This was probably the album or the track which got me into electronic music, because my brother was a big fan of Kraftwerk, and this was back in the 80s when it was kind of new and Kraftwerk would be on the news because they were so weird and there were synths and there was Tomorrow's World and they played and they pretended to be like robots and they stood there and it was all blowing our minds and stuff. And I remember listening to this when I was really young and again just kind of thinking I'd not heard anything like it. And I think it still stands up now because I'm still into electronic music along with my medieval fair music. But it still stands up. I mean, like, you know, I could listen to this and then listen to something by Boards of Canada and then listen to something by Aphex Twin. And I think they would all kind of still sit well together. And I think this one has to go on the new playlist because it does have some lyrics in it. And yeah, well, here it is.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Where's my digital watch gone? Mine is also, oh, I love having the opportunity to put stuff with lyrics on there. Little Dragon. Lovely.
Really lovely.
Really nice music. Ritual Union is the title track from the album of the same name. And I like the beat. I like the nice singing. And it's a lovely track. I haven't got much more to say about it. Just have a listen.
I'm a big fan of Little Dragon. I remember hearing them randomly when they were on an episode of Loose Ends on BBC. It's a radio program that Clive Anderson hosts. Never listened to it, and I just happened to randomly listen to it this one particular time, and it's quite funny. And then Little Dragon were on, and I just thought they're brilliant, and I've been
Interviewed or just playing their stuff?
And just playing their stuff, because it's kind of like an interview. They have like a comedian on and then
right.
like some other person, and then they have a band on and stuff, and they were on. It just seemed like such an unusual kind of lineup for a Radio 4 programme. But yeah, they are pretty good, aren't they?
Yep. Right.
That's it. Okay.
I'm in a rush. We got Ken. Ken, he's still recovering from his operation. We're taking him in prison. I'm so excited. I want to see him open it.
I was going to say, don't say it, but then it
doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I hope he likes his present.
Who wouldn't?
And yes, I know, it's not very often you get given a live sheep. So I hope he milks it. it's not a live sheep. Anyway, thank you for listening. As always, we are Relative Pals on Twitter, also on Facebook. Come to our website, which is relativepaths.uk, and leave us a comment. Leave us a review. 4 stars, 5 stars is always appreciated. Anything less than that, then just write it on a scrap of paper and
swallow it.
Yeah, swallow it. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in you in a couple of weeks' time.
Bye-bye.